Hey, we are not actually back. Actually, I am back. This is the second time ever I've came at you with a solo episode. And trust me, I would love to tell you that this is the worst part of the podcast when I have to do it by myself. But I'm just glad not to have anybody else around. No interruptions, no one else's opinion to jade mine or ruin my normally great takes on everything. Just me and you. That's it. And maybe that's not so accurate. I'm not even going to pretend. The last time I did this, I did impressions of my co-host, sort of. I'm not going to do that to him because it's an insult to do that to him, because if it was a really good insult, I'd probably do it a lot. Just because I wasn't ready. I didn't think I was going to do this episode by myself. And to be honest, I could have just tweeted out that we won't have an episode this week, but so many good things happened in the world of pop culture and geek genre that somebody's got to say something about it, and I'm sure there's no other podcasts that are covering Endgame or Game of Thrones or anything great like that, so I guess I've got to be the one to do it. And if that's the burden I bear, then I bear that burden for you. And so we're going to get into the episode. First, though, I'm going to tell you, this is a couple of firsts. It's not a first that I'm not drinking, but I'm completely by myself not drinking. I'm drinking coffee. I've got a nice second shift brewing candle. To the flavor of liquid spiritual delight burning, and so it smells delicious down here, if that's a good description of how it smells. And I just came off of doing a little bit of chores. Today was an office day for work, and since I'm brand new at my new job, I didn't have a lot of officing to do. But I did a little bit of chores just a minute ago, and I'm here to tell you, I want to pose this question to you. I cleaned out the underneath our sink where we kept all of our extra koozies. And as I was cleaning the sink out, I counted. I don't know how many too many koozies is for a family to have, but I can tell you 37 seems like a lot. I do understand that, and trust me, I'm not counting the bomber jackets, so I had 37 in addition to the bomber jackets. The bomber jackets, you can never have too many. Big shout out to Alex, our buddy. We haven't talked about him in a while, but we love bomber jackets, so big plug for him. Go check out mybomberjackets.com. Waronwarm.com, I think, might be his, or maybe that's his social media. Whatever, I'll tag it in the description. But go check him out. We haven't talked about him in a while. But 37 normal koozies. So I weeded it down because my thought is you never have enough koozies, because when you have people over, like if we're barbecuing or grilling or whatever in the backyard and playing volleyball or just enjoying the day playing some Can Jam, which is a great game we love to play, or some washers or bags or whatever, you can never have enough koozies. But I don't know the last time I had 37 people in my house, nor do I ever want 37 people in my house. So I weeded it down. So my criteria was anything that was work-related that wasn't my present job I got rid of, anything that was business-related that's something that I don't frequent or do, like a la the beer sauce shop or something of that nature, I got rid of. Anything that had to do with a brewery, a sports team, or a superhero, I kept. So I think, I'd have to double check, but I think I counted, I think I'm down to 16 plus my bomber jackets. So that seems like a manageable number. I mean, half of the underneath of our sink, I think, was taken up by koozies. So that's just way too much for one family. I don't know. You tell me. Maybe it's going to be a wake-up call for you. Go check your cabinets and see how many koozies you got, because I can tell you, you can thin some, make some room and thin the herd of koozies if you're like me, because everybody gives a koozie out, so I don't expect to see the PC Bombcast koozie coming anytime soon, unless it's a bomber jacket koozie, because that would be awesome. All right, outside of that, three things happened in my household this week that was important to the world of pop culture. One was Endgame, which we're going to start with. And I mentioned Game of Thrones a while ago, and I'll finish on a bad note of sorts for me and the wife. But first, Endgame. I'm not going to go too spoilery. I'm just going to give you my review, because I think Bender and I are going to try our goddamn best to do a pop culture comic pod episode coming up soon. And if we do that, we'll get into the really breakdown Avengers, maybe a little bit of spoiler warning. So maybe we'll wait a week. I say wait a week so everybody can see it, but $1.2 billion worth of revenue worldwide means a lot of people already saw the movie. So that said, my short and brief review of the movie, it goes a little something like this. I enjoyed it. I liked it a lot. I did not love it. I liked it. I did not think it was quite, I loved it quite as much as Infinity War, but I liked it. And I think my problems with it, if there was some, We waited all movie for the extra characters to get there. When they got there, i.e. Captain Marvel, even though she was there in the beginning, they just felt very rushed. And I don't blame the directors. I think the Russo brothers did an amazing job with the cast they had. And their job was to both wrap up stories and create enough buzz that will for stories to come. So I commend them for that. But it did. At the end of the scene that makes you, you know, want to jump out of your seat and cheer was great. It was great. And it was nice to see. And then there was, for me, just a little bit of obligatory fan service throughout the final battle. That's not a spoiler at all. And there still was some moments that you were excited about. I mean, don't get me wrong. It was a very exciting scene and very excited ending. But I don't know. There was just a little bit of a left me wanting on it. Also, everyone has told me that it did not feel like a 3-hour film. To me, it did feel like a 3-hour film, and I don't mean that as a big insult because it was a 3-hour film. I mean, it's gonna feel like a fucking 3-hour film. What drives the plot for the first 2/3 of the movie, to me, probably is where they could have shaved a little. I don't know where I would. It's not my call to make, but I think I know there's a director, like they said, this was actually closer to 4 hours when they first filmed it. That's insane, because if this is what made it, it would be dragging on if it was longer. And that's not to say that there wasn't a couple parts where I thought, ooh, a little dragging, but it's okay because there was some good stuff. At the same time, as much as it felt like dragging on, I felt like that first real third of the movie, I felt like they crammed and condensed a lot of stuff. It felt like somebody took a lot of exposition and just chopped it up to get it on the screen. And trust me, people, when you hear my rating, I don't mean these as giant insults. I'm just trying to say that it was a amazing ending to 12 years of cinematic awesomeness, and it was the best movie it was going to be, because endings, unless Rise of the Skywalker can prove otherwise, but endings typically aren't as exciting as you want, except for maybe Return of the King. Return of the King was one of the good ones. Certainly Nolan's Dark Knight, the last one, was not the best film. There's a lot of bad thirds out there, or ending and stories out there, especially in the comic world, even in the written print. Sometimes it's just hard to live up to all the greatness that was built up to that moment. But it's still, that said, enjoyable. Some of the things I really loved. Obviously, the last third of the movie is filled with so many aha moments or stand up and clap moments, and then even a few tear jerking moments. The flop even said, had we watched this in the privacy of our own home, she might have teared up a little. As it stands, though, we were at the theater, and we had the whole family with it. It was a whole family affair, and which is a testament to the movies, because Hayden, and even though she likes to go to the movies, she doesn't really enjoy going to the movies that much. She gets very bored, and I'll say for all the him and hawing and I did about the length and stuff, Hayden said she was never bored in the film, so that was awesome. And the wife said, like I said, she would have cried had been at home. So, again, no spoiler, but it's, you know, there's tear-jerking scenes in there. The other thing that I really liked is they paid tribute to Marvel's Secret Wars #4, which is maybe one of my favorite covers of all time. I believe it says something like the Hulk is standing beneath 15 million tons of mountain. He's not happy about it, and the cover is him holding it up to keep all the other Avengers from being crushed. There's a moment like that in the film. That is, and I was like, oh, that's a great tribute to Secret Wars. So, and then there's, one of the big moments is in the comic books is Cap standing by himself, toe to toe against someone that he absolutely can't beat. And you get rewarded. There's very much a lot of rewards for Cap and for Thor. Here's what I didn't think. I mean, not Thor, I'm sorry. Cap and Iron Man. There were some rewards for being fans of them for 10 plus years. Here's what I think you didn't get rewarded on. And as a massive Hulk fan, we didn't, and this is a spoiler and I apologize, but we didn't get to see rematch round 2, Hulk versus Thanos. I would have loved to seen it. I know they went a different direction with Hulk in this, and probably because of they didn't want to feel repetitive, tired, and cliche like some of the Star Wars films may or may not be. That's for a different argument with Bender. But they just didn't want to. I get it, but I still wanted to see Hulk out. I wanted to see a Hulk out. I wanted to see Hulk just tear shit up. That's why I pay to see the Hulk. Also, Thor, even though shout out to friend of the show and best friend in the world, Big D, Mr. Dwayne. He now has his cosplay, and when you watch the movie, just think the dude Thor, and that, and you'll enjoy it. So that's another thing that, even though it was very good comic relief, it was very entertaining. I don't know that. I don't know. I would almost want Thor returned to Thor. I don't like these godlike powers that he's got, and when they kind of pick and choose when to use them, I don't know. That's a little bit of a choppy storytelling to me that's been happening. Even though Ragnarok was an amazing film, since then there's been a little bit of up and downness, I think, with what Thor can and can't do. I mean, he's not just the god of thunder. He's like the god of thunder now. So the power's always been inside him. So I want to see. I would have. I mean, that's hard to handle. They amped him up so much, and then they turned it into that. So I get it. I get it. But all in all, on the Universal Untappd 5-point scale of reviews, I give this a very solid 4, maybe 4.25, borderline 4.28, if you're keeping score. I enjoyed it. I would not go see it in the theater again. I will watch it when it comes out in Blu-ray. I know Dwayne has went to go see it 2 times in 3 days, and I've heard of a lot of people are seeing it multiple times. That's not for me. There's, like I said, great moments. It's definitely worth your money, and chances are you've already flopped your money down to see it, or slammed your money down, because flop is on the show, and I don't want to use her as an adjective. Very good. Very good movie. So go check it out. I think it'd be a verb instead of an adjective, like an action word. That's a verb, right? I think so. So check it out. Let us know what you think. Tweet at me at the PC Bombcast, or at PC Bombcast, and say in-game review, and just give it out of 5 how many you think. Cause I said 4.25. It's a great film. I don't know if they could have done a better job of closing it. That said, there were some spots in it, and I know there's some, if you do watch it or you have watched it, go out and read some of the people destroying some parts of the plot and some of the thing, how it ends, especially with one patriotic character in particular. So go look that up. There are some holes there, but I think they tried to explain those holes halfway through it with some parts. But another bonus to me, this is not a spoiler warning, but the fact that Ant-Man essentially came up with a plan and saved the day makes it, I mean, that's early in the movie, so, but I think that's awesome. I think it's given a lot of props to that franchise as well, so check that out. But enough of that. I'm going to keep you in the dark a little bit on some of the details of the movie. Ooh, that's a segue, because speaking of keeping you in the dark, let's talk about last night's, as I record this, Sunday night's, as you listen, which would be the 3rd episode of the world's favorite TV show, Game of Thrones. I first off think the episode was very good. There's some things that I don't think, I'll try not to be too spoilery here too. I don't think that, I hope it's not 100% resolution to that plot thread, but I feel like it is, because they're trying to smash a lot of plot thread resolutions into 6 episodes. This is one of my problems with George Martin, and we've asked him to come on the show a million times and he still doesn't listen. So George, you still have an open invitation. And by all accounts, I hear the guy, he was like at a Ren Fair recently, some other comedian said, I'm walking around and George Martin's there with like a pet dragon on his shoulder, obviously stuffed. But and just enjoying like a giant piece of turkey and what looked to be a nail, but who knows with George. So he sounds like a cool dude, but you got some problems with your writing, bro. Even though it's great, you got some problems. Not judging your writing completely, because I can't write, but I will say that you've left me wanting. And the TV show has built up all these massive threads all over the place, these interlapping stories that seemingly tie together but still need their own resolution. And they're trying to do that really, really quick in 6 or 7 or 8 or whatever episodes we're getting out of this season. So one of the big ones, maybe one of the biggest ones in all of the history of Westeros, came seemingly to an end last night. I hope that's not the case. I hope we hear a little more about it. Maybe Bran will start actually being a value on the screen, as opposed to just kind of really a lot of negativity surrounding him all the time. I mean, anytime he's in the screen, somebody's in trouble. Someone's going to die. Hold the door. Always remember. And so hopefully they do that. But the big takeaway from this episode, the one that the internets are all abuzz about, would be the how dark it was. I get it was a battle with the Night King, and at night, and there it kind of a couple of visuals that came from this. The Dothraki having all ignited swords thanks to the Red Priestess or whatever, Melisandre, I believe is her name. There were some great visuals, lighting of the trenches. So another great part, and thanks to the same person, she really saved the day in that episode, sorta. But it was too dark, and I saw they suggested turning all the lights in your house off and lighting a candle and all these hokey things. Look, it's not an interactive experience, me turning my TV on and just watching. Netflix tried that, and it was only a lukewarm success with Black Mirror, but just give me something I can see. It really was a problem. The flop, she complained, not complained, but I don't want to make it sound like she nagged, but she mentioned it multiple times, like, this might be awesome if we could see it. And I'm hoping this isn't the big final battle that they alluded to, because spoiler here, this is a spoiler, this isn't the final battle, and the trailer for the last three episodes immediately tells you it's not. But what it is was a pretty ultimate conclusion to a piece of the story that you would have liked to have seen better. The best images from this battle all took place in the sky, which was pretty cool. Dragon versus dragon, or dragon versus dragon, or around the big fancy tree of the children or whatever, so you could see that. But other than that, man, there was a lot of darkness it was a lot of stuff that was hard to tell, and a lot of people died. I think we're not done seeing death on the show, obviously, because it's Game of Thrones. But someone brought up a good point on the interwebs that it's really been a while on the show since, like, an important person's been killed. So they sort of did that last night. It was a lot of tertiary characters that were pretty important, like, but not anyone, like, that has really progressed the plot over, you know, like, no Tyrion, another spoiler, sorry, no Daenerys, no Jon, no, not even a Bran, but some of the, you know, the Hound didn't get killed, Arya didn't, Sansa didn't, so... as you watch it, and I apologize, there is still a lot of death, so keep an eye out for it. I would have thought there was more, too, by the way. Like, the one thing this show has always done a bad job with is its use of time and how, how it does it kind of. So, for instance, we remember how quick the dragons and the crows fly and how quick Varys can get from one part of the world to another, seemingly teleporting. The show, like the final battle, there was a point to where all the good guys were clearly overwhelmed. They were pinned against the wall. So it probably would have taken like 3 or 4 seconds for them to be dead. But then there was another 4 or 5 minutes of scenes before something happened and they were all saved. And it was like, no, they're dead. They're dead. Everyone's dead. And in theory, everyone should have died at this, but they didn't. And I guess that's how the show works. But it was great. It's still, all that said, was still a great episode. I just wish it would have been a little bit lighter of us visuals, and they would have thrown a little light, maybe more fires to give us light. I don't know. Because when there was a scene where Arya is trying to evade a bunch of the undead in the library, and it's clearly no light source in there, but it was filmed in a way that we could see the whole scene. That just wasn't the case in the outside battles. So I don't know. Out of 5, using said universal untapped scale of rating, I think I'd probably give it just right out of 4, maybe 3.75. Maybe a 3.75 because I feel like bigger things are to come. But a 4 just because there was some moments that I really enjoyed. It was not, I'll tell you what it wasn't. Battle of the Bastards was a 5 out of 5. That episode's one of the single best episodes of TV I think ever filmed. And that is hyperbole, so you can take a big drink or shot or what have you. But I enjoyed that quite a lot. I enjoyed this, but I enjoyed Battle of the Bastards. That was as fulfilling as a battle as you're ever going to get. I made the joke on Twitter last night, though, that we watched Endgame, came directly home, and watched Game of Thrones, and I felt like I should have put on Saving Private Ryan to go to bed just to completely oversaturate my brain with epic battle and death, because that would have to be like the 3 biggest battles in all of TV and movies. So, like I said, 3.75, 4, one of those two. I'm going to go, let's just call it, I'm just going to give it 4 for Game of Thrones fans out there so they don't lose their shit. four. So if you want, you can even tweet us at that. Tweet GOT review and put the Knights Battle. I don't even know what the episode's called. Knights Battle review. Yeah, whatever you want to call it. Just tell me I'm way off or tell me I'm way on. And the last thing I think I really had to talk about would have been, is, not would have been, but it is, bad news, man, out of the world of Netflix. And I don't know if you've, I don't know how many of you follow me on Twitter, but aside from my love for Common last week, a couple weeks ago, I really professed my love for Timothy Oliphant's character in Santa Clarita Diet. I think he deserves all the acting awards for it because he's always been this, he was the Deadwood tough guy. He was Raylan Givens, which is one of my favorite characters ever. He's just played that calm, cool Clint Eastwood type guy, and he's been the crazy guy. He's been kind of the bad guy. He's done a lot of good things. He was I can't even remember the name, but there was a movie with Steven Zahn where, no spoiler if you've never seen it, but it's a couple of couples out on hiking in some tropical island, and it turns out there's a murderer on the loose, and it's kind of who's the murderer. He's in it, and he's like this. I mean, he's as tough as it gets in this. So it's an anxiety and just so on edge in every scene. It's a work of art, man, for an actor. We liked it. It was a slow burn on the first season. The second season, I enjoyed thoroughly, and this is just the way the second season did. So it sucks to see it go. I really would like we're never going to see it, and I understand why we wouldn't see it, but I really would like to see why they do or how they come up with their what should get money, because seemingly there's a pile of cash that they throw around everywhere and they never let out the numbers, but we assume the numbers are good on stuff. But I wonder, like, you know, if they look at it and they say, well, Santa Clarita's good, but it's only had 2 million views, whereas Stranger Things has 20. And I'm just using arbitrary numbers. I'm just based on how many subscribers to Netflix there is. There's got to be a percentage of subscribers that they want you to hit in order to keep a show going, I'm assuming. Because I don't know how they get their money back other than just subscriptions. I don't know. It's a weird... I tell you what, they made a lot of money, so who am I to question their corporate dynamic or their business model? But it just, when you cancel a show I say it because I'm a fan of it, that should have life but ends up getting terminated, you just got to wonder what factors goes into it. And we know with you know, normal terrestrial TV or normal cable, that you have ratings, and even though these ratings don't quite reflect the world we live in now because of streaming and things of that nature, you've got sponsors and that help, you know, really make the show go. And I don't know. I'd like to see it because I see, you know, for they canceled it, and then my YouTube suggested videos automatically pops up like 10 more new shows that they've got coming out. So it's like, how do they determine what's good and not? I don't know. Or what's a hit and what's not. But this was definitely a hit in our house. Something we really, really, really wanted to watch again, keep going with. But it's not going to. So I know Timothy Oliphant's going to be back in the Deadwood film, and hopefully there's a long life of comedic roles after that. Kind of like saw the trailer for Men in Black International. Was before the end game, and it was Chris Hemsworth, and you know, he's more, I did not enjoy really the female Ghostbusters movie, except for a couple of the there was a couple of funny moments, but the majority of the funny moments involved Chris Hemsworth. And then, you know, Ragnarok and even Endgame gives us more comedic moments from Chris Hemsworth, who's just, he's another one of those guys, man. When he does comedy, he is just, he owns it. And who would have known that guy would have been funny as can be? And Timothy Oliphant remains the same way. So I hope he gets a chance to do more roles like that, or more Raylan Givens style roles. I don't give a shit. I just want the guy to land on his feet and keep making TV that I enjoy, because I mean, he's one of those guys that I damn near have enjoyed everything he's been in, going all the way back to Girl Next Door, where he was the bad guy porn director or producer or whatever. I just like the guy. So yeah, so I don't know that I have anything else to talk about. I do. We will get back to our normal show here in the next week or two. I would like to get, maybe like we'll wait a week, and then Bender and I will break down a post Marvel Phase 1, Phase 2, whatever phase we're in. The give our final thoughts on Marvel Endgame. I got a feeling we'll get a little bit of arguing maybe on that. Really need to get it out of our system before Rise of Skywalker comes out at the end of this year, because we'll probably put on gloves and go at it with each other on that one. I'll get Tommy back on the episode soon, maybe even the flop. I don't know. We'll tell you how our in-home wine tasting went at some point, I'm guessing, which was a good weekend. I guess I should end with this. Went and saw Patton Oswalt, Big D and his wife, April, and then the Dandelion Matthew and his wife, Josette, came in town, and Hao Pao and his wife were supposed to, but they weren't able to. But the four of them and the two of us went to see Patton Oswalt at the St. Charles Family Arena. The female comic that opened up to it for him was lukewarm funny. I would give her like a 2.75 out of 5. She was above average. Not great. She had a character, and she stuck to the character even when, for me, the character wasn't really working. Its shtick wasn't working, but she was funny. And I would tell you her name, but she never introduced herself, and Patton did it so fast that none of us caught it. And I could take the time to look it up and find out who she was, but they didn't take the time to really make sure we knew her name. So if they don't care, why should I care? So if you can take, for you, Miss Thing, that opened up for Patton Oswalt here in St. Charles this past Friday, for you, if I could give you a world of advice from one absolutely nothing close to being a professional comic to another, fucking let us know who you are. No, I would bet a significant amount of people in the arena could not have told you her name, like, at all. So that was a bummer for her, for her career. I mean, you're opening for Patton Oswalt. And speaking of Patton Oswalt, there was at one time he was considered one of the greatest touring comics in the world. He took some time off, obviously, because of the passing of his wife. That's been a few years. He's since remarried. It was kind of cool to hear him talk about that, because there was a significant amount of the internet that kind of tried to lambaste him on how quick he moved on. But I think everybody grieves different. And, the guy does have a daughter with his original wife. So, you know, he's allowed to move on any way he wants. He obviously loves his first wife, because he's done, post-mortem, did a lot of things for her and stuff. And he talked the way he handled talking about the new wife was I think it was tastefully done. And Patton's one of those guys that the flop did not enjoy the show as much as we did, because she was sandwiched between me and Dwayne, and it was uncomfortable because we're two ham hocks of men. But I was worried more about her not getting the show, because Patton sometimes goes really, really deep into the geek references. Not just geek, like comic book geek, but he goes really deep into like old Hollywood and some like 70s and 80s TV references. If you know his original, one of his big, I can't remember the name of it, but he had a big stand-up album where he really, really went on about the, I can't think of the guy's name, but The Kid Stays in the Pictures, a documentary about him. He can do that, and I don't think it alienates some people, but I think if you know what you're getting into, you really gravitate more towards Patton, which I do. But he didn't go that. He just went about, most of his material in this one was turning 50, was moving on in life, was the end of this big geek journey for Game of Thrones, Star Wars, Avengers, all this stuff. So he really had some great stuff about that fatherhood. And he handled it in the most Patton way possible. So I guess out of 5 on the Untappd scale, I'd say this show was about a 4 for me. And part of that is just I'm so happy to see him touring again. Hopefully we'll see him more on TV and whatnot again as well. So yeah, that was enjoyable. If you get a chance to go snag Patton, go some tickets to snag. I give the venue he chose, though, a 2, because the St. Charles Family Arena is not a great venue for comedy. If you ever listen to stand-up comics talk, it's very hard to fill an arena, and it's very there's no intimacy to it. I would rather see him at the Pageant, or like when we saw Rogan at the Peabody Opera House or something like that. Those are Fabulous Fox. Those are great places to watch comedy. Those are great. I want to feel close to the comedian, and you did not with, even if I think you're in the front row, still just that open air, the laughs go up and they don't reverberate off the walls, and that's what I like. I like feeling like the entire room has got a big, great big belly laugh. But still, material was great. Show was pretty fun to do. It was great having all those guys in town and gals in town. Did a little bit of drinking. We did went to the beer sauce shop. Some of them had not been there. Ate a little lunch there. So shout out to the beer sauce. Go get some lunch. Get some sandwiches there. And then we did this in-home wine tasting, which will make Vissy come on so she can maybe reference the girl, and we can give her a proper shout out on who did it. But other than that, that's it. I'm going to quit rambling. You heard me for about 30 minutes, just me. So I hope it didn't pollute your ears. And I hope you I hope you do shout out your thoughts on what I just talked about, and we'll go deeper into the film with Bender here. But other than that, pint-sized half episode this week, so now you can go out and play or do whatever it is you can do when you're not wasting your time listening to me. So here comes the music.